This is a production of Cornell University.
Well, I was right about APEC.
The time is 4:45. Could the representatives and members take their seats, please? And John, may you please call the roll? Can you? Should you? Call the roll. I don't know.
This is your last meeting clerking the student assembly?
John,
let's all clap for John. John's been doing this for a while.
Yeah,
John.
Yeah,
John. Yeah,
John. You know what?
Julian, you had a point of information? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. China Nancy is running late. Yeah. Wait, you're not even on the agenda.
Anyone with an HDMI port that can help out Julian?
Please. Yeah, just like for the.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, we need that. Perfect, thank you.
Thanks.
We'll now be moving into approval of the minutes. If people want to take a look at the March 5th minutes.
Motion to vote.
There's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All abstaining by a vote of 23-0-1. Minutes were approved. Lucas? We didn't put it on, but this is supposed to be on. So there's a presentation from Lucas and Kate on the Census 2020. So if you want to come to the center table real quick.
Yeah,
this
will be
Mike.
Okay. Microphone.
Kate, just hold.
So, as you all hopefully know, I'm the chair of the city. Our best to try to make sure we're integrating with the community and working back and forth to keep everyone informed on campus and in the Ithaca community. So we have some things we'd like to share regarding the census, given that the situations are pretty tricky right now. I'll just have Kate introduce herself. Yeah, so census is a critical endeavor taken up by the government every 10 years. It's really important that everyone is accounted for, and we're now in an interesting situation where students, which are supposed to be counted for on campus, every undergraduate student, graduate student, everyone that's in the Ithaca community that attends school here is counted as a member of the Ithaca community. And we usually have campaign efforts that would start in April to try to promote that. And it would be easy, we'd be sending things out through the means of our housing office and things like that. It would be automatic. That's not going to happen because of the circumstances of everyone leaving campus early. So we're trying to really make sure that everyone understands, represents, to or communicates to their constituencies that one way or another, to try to mark yourself down as a member of the Ithaca community. When you fill out the census, put down where you live in Ithaca as your residence. That's critical to Ithaca's funding, as Cornell students comprise a quarter of the county's population and about one half of the city of Ithaca's population. And then all those numbers go into distributing more than $675 billion allotment by the federal government. And that's critical to making sure that Ithaca is prepared to handle when we all hear in instances such as this, extenuating circumstances. They need all the money they can get. So I really encourage everyone to look for census information in the coming weeks and ask questions, reach out to Kate in the Office of Community Relations, reach out to your local representatives, things like that. Anything you can do to make sure that you're filling out the census and indicating your residence.
So if you live off campus, you will receive an invitation starting today to participate in the U.S. Census. You can also go to 2020census.gov and click participate here. You can enter your address and participate that way. Instructions are coming to you through the mail. What most of you already didn't know, and it's even more confusing now, is that you do count here, not at your home. Even when you go home, I always think this says it's really super critical for Ithaca, for students, and for your future students for the next 10 years that we get you all counted. Every 1,000 students we don't count is a 1% decrease in funding in a lot of really critical programs. And as we said, 25% approximately of the county's population and half of the city of Ithaca are students from Cornell. So please. But if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them, because as part of my community relations role, I'm the liaison for the Census Bureau. We will still get messages. We're not giving up. I think tomorrow morning the off-campus living office is rolling out messaging to their listserv. So we'll still be trying in many different ways to get information to you. But if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. If not, I know you have a lot of things more in the forefront of your minds than the U.S. Census.
Thank you so much. Are there any immediate questions from the members? If not, Lucas can pass along your contact information, Kate, and people can ask questions. Thank you so much. Before we go to Mariah, I just want to announce two quick things. First, working with SAFC, we have been able to get SAFC donating $150,000 to the Access Fund. So that's going to bring us to $178,000. My goal is to hit $200,000 by the end of the week, $200,000 to the Access Fund. So please, if there are students who are in need of a plane ticket home, of paying for storage space, or buying a new laptop for virtual classes, please, please, please encourage them to apply to the Access Fund. Send them the links. It does not negatively impact their financial aid because it's already routed through the financial aid system. I would highly encourage everyone to continue, you know, reaching out and supporting students who are in need, who are thinking, how do I financially, you know, do this? So that's that. My second update is that working with administrators in the campus activities office who run the Cornell bus program, we're going to be increasing the number of buses to Syracuse the weekend before spring break, so the weekend we go on spring break, so that students can get to the Syracuse airport. We're decreasing the ticket price from $30 to $10, so students don't have to pay as much. The Access Fund can also cover that ticket purchase if there is a need. We're also going to be having buses to both Buffalo and Philadelphia. So we'll be announcing those permanently on Monday. Students can now buy their plane ticket there. The cost of those two buses It's still to be determined based off of, you know, what's going on. So I would highly encourage people to keep an update on the bus ticketing website. We're working really closely with them to make sure that students have, you know, ways to get to where they need to go to leave campus on such short notice. So those are my two updates. So please, and then lastly, like, I'm very deeply appreciated for every member of the Student Assembly, every member of the Office of the Student Advocate doing all of this work in such a short period of time. This is such a hard period of time for so many students on this campus. And the amount of emotion and emotional labor being put into this work is really important. Don't also lose sight of those other goals. So your big projects that you're still working on as students, you know, you can continue those. The semester's not over, it's just through Zoom. You can still persevere through that. So keep doing that. And we'll be doing our hardest to make sure that, you know, regardless if we're meeting in the memorial room or not, the Student Assembly is going to continue elevating the concerns of the student body to make sure that the university is actively supporting the needs that need to be met for the students, whether they stay here or they go home. So that's just my quick little announcement about it, and then I'll pass it off to Mariah about special projects funding.
Sassy's event was canceled, unfortunately. So that can be.
Yeah, we have to like technically reject it from the.
Well, actually, this was just an announcement. It wasn't something that had to be voted on.
Oh, because it's in a resolution format.
Oh, okay, I guess we can just reject it.
Yeah, we can withdraw the resolution.
Yeah, so I'll withdraw resolution 53, John.
Yeah.
And then 54, I'm still in communication with. The women's club volleyball team who had a tournament that is not yet canceled, but they're in the process of like removing themselves from the tournament, and so they may or may not still need money to pay for things that are non-refundable that we like agreed to pay for, but that they might not be getting a refund for, like flights and hotel deposits.
And Union Days has been canceled as well, Mariah.
Yeah, Union Days.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to do that as well.
Okay, Julia. Just go off there. Sorry. So here, thanks. So there was a motion to withdraw Resolution 53. Can there?
Second.
Yeah, there's a second. All in favor of withdrawing Resolution 53, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstaining by a vote of 24-0-2. This resolution has been withdrawn. Mariah wants to vote yes on 54, right?
Yes.
So there's been a motion.
Well, actually, it's just a motion to overturn the committee's decision.
Overturn the committee's decision?
Yeah.
To
so
what?
So if there is no motion, because it's less than 1,500. So it's
yeah, you'd have to motion to overturn.
Okay. So yeah, unless there's... Yes.
Is there any dissent to Resolution 54? Seeing no dissent. The special projects request has been approved, and then we're going to withdraw Resolution 55. So is there a second to that?
Second.
There's a second to it. All in favor of withdrawing Resolution 55, please raise your hand or placard. So all opposed, all abstaining, by about 22-0-5. This resolution is withdrawn. As they continue setting up, we'll move into open microphone.
We're now going to move into open microphone. If any member of the community wishes to speak, please come to the table in the middle.
Yeah. 22-0-5.
Last call for open mic. We're going to close up the microphone.
Sarah, you had a question?
What bus companies are you looking to order the bus tickets?
Whatever the one we're currently contracting here. Let me see if it's in my email. I think it's Swather? Swather is the company? Something like that.
Swather.
That's the one. Yeah, it's the one that we currently use that company for Syracuse. So we're still waiting to hear about the Philly and Buffalo, but
that's dependent upon availability, but we're really pushing to make sure that we open up those two lines for students. On Monday, we're hoping to get our newsletter out to the full student body, so we're working on content for that. My hope is to have resources that the OSA has been working on, and links to various resources and links to things, and that will go to the full undergraduate student body for students. So we will have the knowledge about that. Yep. And keep spreading it through your personal channels, keep spreading it through listservs that you run and other things, and keep reaching out to students about the opportunities. I would say just, you know, the Syracuse one, I would encourage people to, like, make plans to travel home, for sure. That's what I would say. And that can include the Syracuse and say, like, be on the lookout for Buffalo and Philly, but don't, you know, those aren't guarantees yet, but on Monday we'll know for sure. So as they continue to get setting up.
I said no worries about it.
But yeah, go. What's your question? Here, say it in the mic.
Mic.
I can't hear.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel like talking about this. But do we, like, have an assembly have plans for one for a meeting until spring break and then after that?
Meetings until spring break are going to be business as usual, so please continue, barring anything, let's continue meeting in public here every Thursday. Committee meetings are the same. Everything, let's continue business as usual just to get the things that we need to get done. Exec meets on Tuesday. We'll be discussing what the best way forward is to make sure we're not overbearing students and making sure that we're actually doing work. But all of our meetings, regardless, will be public through the Zoom, through what we already do with the agenda.
We're planning on meeting through Zoom.
Currently, that's what we would be doing. Everything would have to be virtual.
Awesome.
Any other questions that I can answer? Oh, why you gotta ask me the hard questions about me?
I'm exhausted. Joe, do we know what the deal is with, there have been a lot of things that people are saying campus will remain open, and now there are things of saying undergraduates will not have access to any buildings on Central Campus. Do we know which one of those is going to be true? Do we have any idea?
Building, you know, libraries will be open for sure. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. As it stands now, you know, libraries, academic buildings are open. Technically, I would not encourage. Like, I would virtual. Classes won't be held in the classrooms. Like, so virtual means call in through your Zoom. Work with your faculty member on attendance. I know some students are saying, "Oh, I'm in the same class with someone else." So make sure you're actually getting counted through attendance for virtual. So please reach out to your individual faculty members. Dining in Res Life, the guidance that I have on Res Life is that all residential buildings will be open. They're not going to consolidate students into ones until the summer to make sure the density is decreasing. Dining facilities, they don't will be open, which ones are still to be decided upon. For students who are trying to stay on campus, please fill out the survey. And fill out the most recent survey. Get the accurate count.
Can we post that on the Student Assembly Facebook page?
Please? Yeah, we'll be posting that. If Student Campus Life has sent out multiple reminders, so please keep trying. Fill it out. Decisions will be coming soon. There are plenty of other, you know, resources on housing that are out there floating around. There's like the Mass Google Doc. So yes. But, you know, ultimately, if people want to take the healthiest approach, if you have the means, if you have the ability, I highly, highly, highly recommend going home. You know, obviously Cornell University can't tell you if you're an off-campus student, but please, like, if you have the ability to, like, go home, flatten the curve.
I think we should be careful with using the word home, because for a lot of people, they use their home
Yeah, like
so I think we just want to be careful with that.
Wherever you call home, like obviously if you are from like unsafe family environment, stuff like that, like please put it. Yeah.
Let's be cautious.
I'm just vamping.
Oh, I said we're doing this for an hour afterwards.
Yeah.
The town hall.
So there's still. Yeah. I mean, I'm vamping this right now. That's the only thing. Okay. Finally done.
Just present it. Put it in presentation mode.
I'm sorry, I didn't have your.
Wait, no, it's not.
I literally don't.
Can't you just do this?
It's classified as just new business legislation.
Do you have to revisit the business today?
There we go. Good to go?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So the root of the problem is that when fossil fuel companies metabolize carbon dioxide and methane and other greenhouse gases, they are emitted into the atmosphere because they have a higher specific heat capacity. The normal atmospheric gas, they trap heat that is reflected off the Earth and coming from the sun. And as this happens, it also triggers popular green enhancement cycles in which, for example, like permafrost in like northern regions of North America now emits more methane, so this meeting keeps up.
So in the next 2 decades, we're estimating, along with the IPCC's most recent report, that warming is likely to reach 1.5 degrees Celsius if nothing is done. On top of that, it's likely to reach 2 degrees Celsius in the decades after that, which is really reversible. Because it's been found that pretty much all of this warming is due to anthropogenic influence since the industrial period. So that's all humans contributed to this warming.
So as temperatures rise and other impacts of fossil fuel emissions proliferate, the economy and infrastructure and energy in the United States is going to be compromised. In large part, this is because as temperatures rise and the water that's used as a coolant in a lot of energy production facilities warms, the total factor productivity of those facilities is going to go down, which means energy is going to be more expensive. And especially as temperatures increase, people are going to need to cool their homes more and like use medical equipment more. So we're going to see supply go down and demand go up, which is going to mean prices are going to rise and the use of this energy is going to be restricted. Yes. So. Reprehensible.
they'll be losing over half of their geographic ranges with both 1.5 and 2 degree warming. And many of these ecosystems are delicate, interconnected, and dynamic. And even though it seems like a small loss, these losses of flora and fauna will catalyze really significant dispositions.
I think, as we all have known since Intermediate Truth, climate change and global warming are going to have a significant impact on coastal populations and island populations. I think a prime example of this is the island nation of the Maldives, who in 2011 issued a warning or recommendation by the United Nations to vacate their land and essentially bring their entire population to somewhere else. They were the chosen nation in 2008 who, I think, believed 2008, who held their Congress underwater to draw attention to the fact that their country will soon be underwater. So as families like the Maldives are forced to bring their populations elsewhere, we can expect global political dynamics to shift as these countries have to like occupy land that is previously occupied, presumably. So if we're taking into account cultural sensitivities and the dynamics that are going to occur between those new populations, we can expect to create both a generation of environmental refugees as well as a generation of people who are traumatized and perhaps physically harmed by the conflict that ensues of these disruptive geopolitical relations.
So divestment of fossil fuels is also a racialized issue. The recent NAACP report found that 68% of Black Americans live within 30 miles of the coal-fired power plant. The report also detailed the tactics employed by the fossil fuel industry to manipulate and disempower communities of color. So these strategies generally involve manipulation of information and public perception, which also goes against the goals and principles of the university, which we'll get into. And the manner in which the fossil fuel industry treats communities of color is particularly relevant because these communities tend to bear disproportionate amounts of the negative externalities produced through the fossil fuel enterprise.
Additionally, 35% of sites of fossil fuel extraction lie either directly on or near indigenous land. And fossil fuel projects have consistently violated indigenous human rights and caused significant long-term damage on indigenous traditional territories. These actions must be contextualized by the history of antagonizing and colonialism of those weaker indigenous communities. Additionally, in light of Cornell University's occupation of the Canadian Nation's territory, should be especially sensitive to these relations. Also, we would love to go more in depth on these issues, but in light of, I think, our privilege and lack of expertise, lack of perhaps like emotional investment as like non-members of this community, we thought it best to give a more general description of what's going on.
For the next category is meaningful impact. And a recent study showed that it was just 90 fossil fuel companies that account for 2/3 of all carbon dioxide and methane emissions. So divesting from these companies and more, which we intend to do, will have an immediate, meaningful impact on reducing these emissions. And destabilizing the fossil fuel industry is a route to a sustainable and just future.
Also, I think when a lot of people have questions about divestment, they have to do with whether or not this is actually going to have a meaningful impact on the fossil fuel industry. And as I mentioned last week, a report was published in 2019 that detailed how, in the wake of divestment announcements and large-scale climate protests, the share prices of the largest 200 oil and gas companies actually do decrease with meaningful or a reasonable amount of confidence. So, as those decreases in share prices incentivize the fossil fuel industry to continue their act, we can expect to have a meaningful impact on the fossil fuel industry.
So divestment also emphasizes contemporary climate science, which Cornell has the Atkinson Center to develop. This is really important today because there, you know, the Trump administration is consistently and constantly denying climate change. And Julian can talk a bit more about that.
So for example, the Trump administration changed the social cost of carbon from a figure that accounts for the social cost of carbon on populations worldwide to a figure that only considers American populations, which is obviously inaccurate because the impact of global warming affects everybody across the globe and not just American citizens. And as this So especially as the Cornell University's Code of Conduct condemns, yes, the manipulation of information and academic dishonesty, the actions of the fossil fuel industry historically have been consistent with the global principles of the university. For decades, the fossil fuel industry has suppressed climate science and manipulated populations to the ends of expanding their businesses and their production facilities. So in this right, the fossil fuel industry's actions are inconsistent with the global principles of the university. Seriously question what the goals and principles of the university were.
So in closing, we want to my best to avoid the worst effects of climate change, to support the groups who've been antagonized by the fossil fuel industry for decades and by colonial systems for far longer, and to provide for a sustainable future. And Julian and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, if anyone.
What did he say?
Questions from the community.
Oh.
Go, like, get names if you have names.
I need
some to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Kat will be going around to members of the community. She'll text me up the names. And if you're a community member, just come up to either side where there's a microphone, grab the microphone, and ask your question to either Julian or Indigo. SA members, I'll be taking a speakers list. Please raise your hand if you want to be on the speakers list. So far, I already have Mariah.
Motion for a straw poll.
Okay, there's been a motion of a straw poll. Second. Okay, so straw poll, basically, for members of the community, straw poll is just when the SA takes an informal vote to gauge where people are at. So all who would be voting in favor, please raise your hand. Am I officially going to count? All those who would be voting against, please raise your hand. And all of those who are abstaining or unsure of where their vote would be. Okay, thank you so much. Mariah.
So thank you all for, thank you both for presenting. I think that this is a great cause. I do worry though about if this is kind of performative in nature. I don't know if you all talk to minority communities, specifically the Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks. I know I personally am not aware of your work with minority communities in this. And so I am a little bit concerned about like your kind of underlying mission and goals.
I think it's an entirely valid concern. And when Indigo and I first talked about this in August, we acknowledged that we're two like ISCS white people. We might not be the best people to be like heading a fossil fuel divestment campaign. So we like tried extensively to try and reach out to those communities. We had, I think Colin shared on our Google Doc week two of our work. We reached out to SAC, and from there, we reached out to, we had conversations with Uche about a month or two in, where we discussed him serving as a point person to us and other lines of organization. At the time, he was serving as VP external for Alana, so he knew the point people in those organizations that we personally didn't know, but we had the intention and maybe a significant effort to reach out to those communities because we think it's important that we do, and those are the groups that are most directly impacted by the idea of the fossil fuel industry.
Thank you. Yuha.
Thank you for the resolution. Two questions. First thing, similar concern about the everyone will acknowledge that we will have some financial impact eventually. Have you had some conversation with organizations that can represent international students' interests on the campus regarding the financial impact on international students? Because unfortunately, compared to some domestic students, they are sometimes is pretty vulnerable for some severe financial impact. Second question is, it's just a question, but so in the resolution you mentioned that the reason that we will have minimal financial impact is because, you know, the fossil fuel industry stock or general financial performance is not doing well, while we are seeing an increase of return or profit over green new energy and stock and investment over there. If that's the case, I believe Cornell, you know, they know how to do investment and will definitely invest the majority of their investment in, you know, green new energy to receive more return. Than what's the point of for us who probably do not have a lot of experience over investment or financial industry in general to tell them divest from fossil fuel when they probably already divest?
So I'll start with that last answer. That's a great question. So it's not Cornell personally that is managing like all of our accounts, but it's actually a bunch of private organizations, and they don't have to disclose to us where their assets lie. So it's not like Cornell is actually like analyzing every decision of every company that we invest in. Rather, we rely on other outside sources to make those investments. And the companies that we happen to rely on are companies that frequently choose not to invest in impact investments, even though they've been found out before the S&P over the entire past decade. Sorry, what was your other question?
And your question had to do with the economic impact of divestment on the university. Yeah, so most university endowments have between 4 to 6% in the fossil industry, but in that big cues that the university released last month, I believe, they said that they had about 1% invested in the oil and gas 100. So the impact of reinvesting that 1% into renewable shares on the broader endowment would be negligible, mostly because the reallocation of 1% is in itself negligible, and as net renewable shares have been shown to perform better than oil and gas shares recently, it may actually have a positive impact. But also, I think it's important to note that for employees and many other groups on campus who rely on university funding, that funding does not come directly from the endowment. Like, I know I talked to Adam Howell, who is a member of the employee assembly. And he noted that despite employees having concerns about their pay being cut because of divestment, the way that staff are paid it's removed from the direct cash stream point of the endowment.
I think also implicit in your question was a concern about the current state of the stock market. And in all of our resolutions that we passed in the other four assemblies, it doesn't have any specific timeline, but instead asks the trustees to divest in a manner as rapidly as possible. So we know the state of the current stock market, and we don't expect that to play a factor in divestment, because the university will be able to decide as soon as everything is in order to divest.
Thank you, Jacob.
Finally, the assembly has been waiting so long, and it disappoints me to see that it's finally that it's taken this long. It's happened. I am very weary of the actual effective nature of this resolution on how it's run. Just given the timeline, I know that this is something that we all can control, the outbreak of the pandemic, but this is going to put some serious threats, and I want
so we had coordinated with the people who passed resolutions in the other four assemblies, and we were very intentional, vague in the ask to the Board of Trustees, because at the end of the day, they hold the power, and the people that are managing the funds hold the power, and they, as long as they're divesting, probably know better how to do that, and while keeping investors of the university in mind than we do. So I think the clause, the be it therefore resolved, is as rapidly as possible in an orderly fashion. And if they agree to do so, I think we would hold, take their word for that. And if they actually agree to publicly undertake fossil fuel divestment, then it would be in their interest to follow through on that. So intentionally vague.
I think that being intentionally vague is fundamentally flawed. I think that just due to the fact that, you know, I don't trust in good faith resolutions. I want a concrete timeline. Is there any reason why we don't have it? We don't have specific measures in place? Because I think that being super vague is allowing for a lot of flexibility for the trustees. So I personally don't trust in the decision to do that as well.
Yeah, so I actually had the same view at first, and that's why when Julie and I were writing this, we were coming up with lots of different options for timelines and courses of divestment, because I didn't personally believe that the board would go ahead and divest or just tell us they were doing it. And I think a lot of that comes from us having a student perspective, because after we had multiple meetings with leaders such as Bob Howard and Caroline Levine, like, they actually enlightened us as to why this was the smartest approach for getting the board to actually commit to divestment. Yeah, I would definitely send their contact information to you. So thank you.
I'm very familiar with them.
Yeah, I'm going to cut this off because this is a question about protocol. Fundamentally, since we will be, if this is passed, we'll be the fifth assembly, goes automatically to the board. The board has done this divestment protocol before. They have put this in place after our last divestment. They will consider this question. They have been they said that they've been willing to consider the question. I know the sponsor have been in touch with the University Council, Secretary of the Corporation. So I think it's a procedure question that you're asking. The board in full faith will take this issue up if we pass it today, because it is in line with the procedures that they have outlined. You're welcome. Arme.
Thank you guys for bringing this and for presenting on it. So correct me if I'm wrong, but all the other parts of this are passed. So now I'm going to the board of trustees. What is your, how do you feel about this going through the board of trustees? What do you think? What are you thinking is going to happen next? Because, again, I share the concern that, you know, despite the word shared government, somehow, for some reason, the Board of Trustees, who most of the people who don't live here and don't have a stake in the university, somehow make all the decisions.
We're feeling hopeful and confident that we've made the best case that we can, and that time for justice. Cornell has also done a lot of amazing work to try and sway them. But ultimately, the decision is in their hands, and all we can do is hope that they understand the precarious point we're at in terms of our continued survival as a species. Hopeful.
I'm sure you've all noticed the activism that CJC has been engaging in this semester. The board has certainly noticed it as well in the administration. And on top of that, this comes at a really great time for us. Georgetown divested, Brown just divested, I think last week, some UC system divest, Big Ten. So it's really a domino effect. We want to be the first Ivy League. We're not going to be that anymore, but it's only going to be, a very short amount of time, likely before the rest of the Ivy League starts seriously considering divestment. So even if the board doesn't have a direct stake in what goes on campus, they do have a stake in our reputation and how much money we make, which is why it's a good time right now from there because they think to divest.
Thank you. Valentina.
Hi. Thank you both for a very extensive researched resolution. I have two questions. First, I want to echo back to what Johan said about the financial burden part. This is more so just maybe a recommendation, including an appendix, but if this eventually gets to the board, I think it'll be way more convincing because for them, their main concern is the money. And then my two questions first. Indigo mentioned
Sarah. Tomas.
I just want to caution all members of the assembly to not speak for communities that they are not a part of, and that includes low-income students, especially those that are Black, Brown, or Indigenous, because a lot of the reasons that we are low-income is because of things like fossil fuels. So I promise you that we would rather our financial aid not come from it and come from something sustainable, and also our families not get cancer. Also, in addition to that, just to preface this, I will be voting yes regardless because I do think that the value of divestment is more important than the performativity that I've seen here. That being said, I don't think sharing a blank Google Doc with an Indigenous member of the SA or calling out Moche is enough consulting with minority groups on this campus. And I think we all need to do a better job of consulting with people, not just talking about them, but letting them talk for themselves. Because being an ally is uplifting them so they can speak for themselves, not speaking for them. In addition to that, I also think the fact that the said Indigenous person walked out of the room because of how frustrated the person speaks to that. Please stop tokenizing communities, especially when members of those communities are in the room. Thank you.
Motion to vote.
There's been, I need a motion to move into business of the
day.
Let's have them respond, then we'll motion to move it into business of the day. Julian and Indigo.
To be fair, we didn't just share like the lack of calm. We told him we want your input. We want you to like have a voice in what we write in this resolution because we recognize that he has more mistaken in, and his community has more mistaken than we do. I'm sorry if it felt like tokenizing when I said that we had a conversation with Uche, but we don't know the point people in a lot of sub-organizations, and he did it. When we talked about it, it wasn't like us coming to you being like, hey, help us. It was genuinely like he came to us saying, all right, if you could help me, said that would be amazing. I'm just saying what happened. And I understand still that it's probably not enough, and that we should have done more, but also, I apologize.
There's been a motion to move into business of the day. There's been a second. All in favor of moving into business of the day, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstaining by a vote of 24-0-1. It's been moved into business of the day. There's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? There's been a second. All in favor of passing this resolution, please raise your hand or placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. All opposed, all abstaining by a vote of 23-0-2. This resolution passes. Congratulations, Julian and Inigo. And Climate Justice Cornell. Thank you, everyone. We'll be moving on to Resolution 57. Thanks, Kat.
Please don't leave me.
I'll be here a second. Thank you.
since her freshman year, the last time she'll ever be able to go to it, and so I said to her, you should go. So here we go. To student assembly members and candidates, I want to acknowledge your concerns and frustrations during this difficult time, and I thank those of you who have reached out to me with suggestions, questions, etc. Here is an outline of the main changes to the election calendar and proceeding. 1. The student assembly will be directly nominating and electing a director of elections instead of the executive committee approval. All candidates will be in a closed election, which means no new candidates will be able to run in the fall. The ballot will appear the same as it would have in the spring of 2020 election. This means no new petitions for any seats. 3. Campaigning will cease after the passage of this resolution, except for public messages of gratitude to supporters and notifying them of the changes to the election schedule. 4. The election will be separate from special elections, which will elect freshman reps, transfer reps, and any unfilled seats, being one minority student's liaison and one undergraduate representative to the UA. 5. The current elections committee will decide on an election calendar for the fall before the end of this academic year. 6. All current student assembly members, freshman and junior year, will maintain their seats until the completion of fall elections. This transitional essay will have no legislative power, and members will be removed or disqualified from running if they so choose to exercise any legislative power or convene in the capacity of their said position. 7. The Office of Assemblies will reimburse all current expenses and candidates can start from the current $50 limit next semester. 8. Carrying over endorsements from the spring to fall will be at the discretion of the organizations and individuals who made those endorsements. The Director of Elections and Election Committee are working very closely with the Office of Assemblies to adjust and troubleshoot if any necessary problems arise. Please refer any questions to the committee about research and accountability as well as the Director of Elections. Thanks, Lydia Zeng. Obviously, that's from Lydia herself, but I can say, you know, this is really tough. You never want to be in a position like this, but you're truly, truly, truly in an unprecedented time, and fundamentally, we as the Student Assembly, with our platforms, with our positions, should be focusing on supporting the students that need support the most during this time, rather than trying to run for false positions just because we have egos. And fundamentally, we need to be the people pressing through this time of uncertainty, being the leaders that I know each and every one of you are, emotionally supporting people and making sure that people truly, truly are supported, and we can continue working until this next assembly is elected. So I'm, you know, of course, ask questions, you know, and stuff like that, but I truly want to hear your thoughts. And I think, you know, this has been talked to with candidates in contested elections. The vast majority of those candidates support this change.
Please, if you want to be
a really quick follow-up, sorry. The correct resolution is not the one in your packet. Please reference the one in box. It's the updated
There's
one.
A link in the Slack.
That exec and election will also go to
So now I'll be taking the speaker's list. If you want to be on the speaker's list, please raise your hand and keep it up until I acknowledge you. So we'll begin with Armin.
Until the end of that election in the fall, yes.
Right, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Kirabel?
June 1st, yeah, thank you. You'll have no legislative power. This is just to ensure that we have
mic. Microphone.
Can you repeat that?
People that are staying in the essay, as in, I'm going to.
Yeah.
We would also not be able to.
Yeah, you will, the essay that, you know, starts, the transitional essay, that's everyone in their current positions who are going to be graduating, that we refer to as one, won't have legislative power against you.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just a little bit confused about the legislative power. So the assembly that we currently have that won't have legislative power will be doing what come fall?
Their only goal would be to make sure that a fall election is done. You know, that's it.
So I guess I'm wondering, so there won't be any the essay effectively won't really exist until the election happens. Like, I guess I'm wondering, and this was kind of my comment to you earlier that I'm going to motion to amend soon, is things like the budget. Like, will the current VPF, like, should I make a budget over the summer for the next essay, or should I, like, I guess I'm wondering, because there is no legislative power, what effectively is the essay going to be those first couple weeks we're back on campus before the election happens?
So the essay, in all of its capacity, will be used to run the election, and then, since there's no legislative authority, basically it is, you know, just get the word of the essay out to new students, say, hey, this is going on, there's an election going on that you should be voting in, the representatives of an assembly to come, much like what people do post-elections in the spring, usually, you know. Effectively, if a new president would be elected, you know, I would really kind of step to the side to mentor that individual and make sure that individual is actually calling the shots for the essay because it's a new essay. This essay would essentially just recruit people, support people. You know, since there won't be a VPF on the leadership team, you know, it will be this assembly crafting just a generic one for the beginning and saying, here's what it is, and then just moving on. And then when there is that new assembly, that VPF could see what's up, make those changes, and really get going. It just also establishes a generic point of contact for administrators, so if there is an issue over the summers, and if there are stuff to put on the essay's agenda, that individual would technically be Kat, because she would be the highest ranking member of the executive committee. So, you know, say there's an issue at the university, you know, Kat would be the person of contact for the essay. And for all those other organizations, so like, think of our byline orgs, when they have questions, they would go to Kat. But that would just be for guidance, and then really be followed up with, but, you know, obviously we're in a campaign period, so understand that things might change depending on that, so.
Yeah, I was thinking about finances, because I was thinking about campaign finances as well. It's like, if we don't have a budget, if I don't have legislative power, like, where is that money going to come from, and who's going to approve those kind of, like, transactions, as well as, like,
it would be the new elections committee, essentially, because that's part of an election process, and so they would be the ones, you know, checking the reimbursements and making sure they're coordinating with the Office of Assemblies.
But my thought was that they wouldn't even have a budget. Like, they wouldn't even have a committee budget if I don't make one.
And yeah, and that's
because
why.
Because I have legislative power.
And that's why, at the end of this semester, we would kind of just conditionally approve one for the transitional essay.
Okay.
Like, this essay would be like, here are the funds the transitional essay might use, basically being the candidate's reimbursements.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, Masa?
So the one thing, if you could just confirm that my understanding of this new system is correct, that we are going to appoint a new director of elections.
Yep.
That director of elections will basically create their elections committee.
Yep.
This will be the elections committee for the 2020-2021 school year.
Yep.
And they, after June 1st, will be the only individuals that have any oversight over the student assembly. Are they the only people on the SA that have any ability to do anything more than talk effectively?
I mean, when you say do anything, I would say run the election.
Oh, I was going to
You know what?
Utah.
So I know they will be the body that has power within the student assembly, but I think that's just like in a term that they will be able to put together in the fall election.
So I guess the question that I had is, given this absence of power on the student assembly, and I hate to use the word power because that's not the way I think any of us see it.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, but like the absence of ability to pass any resolutions post June 1st, because elections do take some time, and there may be things that, especially given the current state of affairs and us not knowing where things are going to be, you know, where things are going to be come August, I do worry about the lack of ability of any student assembly to organize before this election happens, which may take some time.
So just looking back onto, because before we did this, we looked back into the records just because we didn't want to mess up anything. And then at the first two meetings of the student assembly, it was something like two resolutions were passed. So we don't really expect there to be like a big influx of resolutions at the beginning of the semester. There never is. But I guess along with that is that we are predicting that the fall elections for 2020 will happen within probably the first 3 weeks of the school year. Again, that's up to the future director of elections, which we will be electing, nominating, voting, and appointing all together. But that's what it looks like.
And sorry for the crosstalk, but even still with that, again, sure, usually we don't pass that many resolutions. I think we can all say that we are currently not in a usual operating procedure. And again, you know, fingers crossed, let's all hope everything's fine in August. But it's definitely possible that it's not. So I just wonder about, and this may not necessarily need to be part of this resolution, but somehow ensuring that if something needs to happen in August.
Oh yeah, so if you look to Article 8, Amendment, Section 1, these emergency election rules and regulations will be closed to amendments unless by unanimous approval of the election committee. So if something is so dire, the election committee can vote to give the transitional student assembly like legislative power. So there are like mechanisms within this document that allow for like issues into the future.
Valentina?
I just have a quick question because usually we do internal election towards the end. So how would that look like?
The new student assembly that would be elected in the fall would do all of that, you know, as soon as possible to their schedule. So whatever that group elected wants to do, you know, that's how they will set up those organizational meetings. And that's up to them and their leadership team that they put together.
So until then, do people on the exec board right now continue their responsibility then?
Like, it would just be in the transitional manner. So, you know, like it wouldn't be, you know, Kat would be acting as EVP of the transitional SA, but effectively president because there is no president because the president graduated during this transitional period. Then, once the new assembly is elected in the fall, they will be that SA and they'll organize themselves with the leadership team, you know, with internal elections for the vice presidents, internal elections for the liaison positions and committee assignments. They'll do that on their schedule.
And then for committee chairs, would that be something at their discretion for committees?
So internal elections will be done after the fall elections. So this will be the first time in which the freshman representatives and the transfer representative, possibly if it's extended to a certain point, will be allowed to vote on those vice presidencies. But also this is just up to the discretion of the director of elections. So I think that like also, and that, like your points are valid, all your questions are valid, but I think that we as a group need to start looking for that director of elections and start suggesting people for that committee, including sitting SA members who are not planning on returning, in which they would forfeit their seat to take that elections committee position, et cetera.
Motion to vote.
There's a motion and a second. Is there
the day?
Oh, move this into business of the day.
Oh, yeah.
There's a second. All in favor of moving this into business of the day? State your consent. We can still have a speaker's list. You're just moving this into business of the day. Right? Okay. All right. All in favor of moving this into business of the day? Opposed? Any abstentions? By a vote of 26-0-0, this is moved into business of the day. There's a motion to
second.
Vote. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent? State your dissent.
I issue.
Use your microphone.
question?
Y'all mind if I just get clarification?
Alright, I guess I'll withdraw.
Also, if y'all have questions offline, like, you can ask myself, Lydia, Joe, okay. But just really quick, the clarification is that part of the elections committee is, like, relatively small, so it's only 8 people, including the director of elections, who's a non-voting member. So I guess that wasn't there, but there is something so needed. And as the election committee has already been voting, the only people that abstain are the people who are either like not there or the director themselves.
So I'm just a little bit afraid of having a big line on the meetings. And then let's say if it's not unanimous, then something happens where we can't come back to campus fall on the 20th, and there is a lot of flux in the mad line and just one person's voting. And then there are many people who want
to. We can amend it to be 2 words.
Okay.
Motion
to amend.
All right.
There's a motion to amend.
It is line 134, we're striking unanimous approval and changing it to two-thirds approval. Two-thirds majority approval.
John, do you have that?
I just need to line up again.
Wow.
134.
Okay. So there's the motion. Is there a second? All right. All in favor of passing this amendment?
I think it's 131. The online.
It's different on the printed.
There's a motion to vote.
Second.
It's a second. There's a dissent. State your dissent. All right.
I don't withdraw.
She's not withdrawing her motion. You need 2/3 to get this to move into voting. All in favor of voting on the resolution on the floor, raise your hand.
It's a vote to vote.
This is a vote to vote. This is not the resolution. Raise them higher, please.
1, 2, 3, 4.
All abstaining. By a vote of 20-4-0, this does move into voting. All in favor of voting, or all in favor of passing this resolution, please raise your hand. All opposed? Any abstentions? By a vote of 26-0-0, this passes. Thank you all for the work. So can we get a motion to, is there anything else on the agenda?
One more.
Okay, there's one more thing on the agenda.
Morgan.
There is a motion to, can you withdraw your motion so he can at least say,
so for the first time in my 2 years in the assembly, I'm introducing the resolution.
Oh, boy.
Why did you start with that?
I have a lot of ways to ask the things I said. So Resolution 58 amends the state rules.
Calm yourselves.
For the past 2 years, I've seen us being bogged down by parliamentary procedure. In many ways, it's good in some other ways, it's not. This is one area where we've seen that. Frequently, we need to move legislation to business of the day in order to vote on it. At the moment, moving to business of the day requires a 2/3 majority. This resolution amends our standing rules so that you can vote directly on legislation and resolutions from new business so long as it receives a 2/3 majority. So with this, I'm going to motion to move for the last time to business of the day.
Is there a second? All in favor of moving this piece of legislation to business of the day, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 23-0-1, this resolution has been moved to the business of the day. There's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. All in favor, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed. All abstaining.
Yeah.
By a vote of 23-0-1, this resolution passes. Congratulations, Brian. There's been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? All in favor, we're looking to adjourn. Please raise your hand or placard. By a vote of 23-0-1, we've been adjourned. There is a Q&A in this room starting now. Please stick around. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.